Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
And another shot, and they score! Jake Bischoff, the defenseman. Rebound, Bischoff! He shoots, he scores! Bischoff on the backhand! Pass at the spot-up, goal! Jake Bischoff, senores!
Hello, the start of crappy basketball. You all good, Jared?
I'm exhausted.
How was 3 hours of Steve Cofield and Adam Hill in the morning?
It was good.
It takes three people to replace the great Clay Baker.
Oh man, that's not true.
Yeah. The Golden Knights won last night. Of course, Brandon Peary scored again. The Raiders introduced Mike Mayock. He had a press conference. There was some interesting comments, mainly about Derek Carr. There's more of a no comment about Derek Carr that we'll get to. But we're gonna start with UNLV basketball because they open Mountain West play tonight against Colorado State. Anybody excited?
What time is that game?
7:30.
So I'm pulling a 15-hour shift.
Yeah, fun day for Jared. Before we get into anything about Colorado State, though, Shakur Justin is having season-ending surgery on his knee, and they expect him to go after a medical redshirt and try to play again next year for UNLV.
Be 24 and just bigger than everyone.
Yeah, just keep going. He got hurt, supposedly. He got hurt December 8th against Illinois. Yesterday was when they announced this, January 1st. Like, that's almost a month where he got hurt, and they were like, well, should we have surgery? I don't really know. That just seems like, I don't know. What were they doing? Like, I know they were trying to see if he could come back and play, but it just seems like he should have made that decision in a week, right? Like, that shouldn't have been a month-long decision there. It just seems like a long time. But it's the right call.
What if it was gamesmanship? What if Coach Menzies was just like, nah, I'm going to need you to dress in your uniform, kind of limp out there.
Psych him out. Put you in warm-ups. Shoot like once. Don't hurt yourself. Shoot once. Make sure the coach sees it. I don't know. It is the right decision for Justin, though, because regardless, if he wants to continue playing at UNLV, if he wants to be done with college and go pro, get the surgery, and you can make that decision afterwards. Like, there was no need for him to come back and play this year. So now he ends up having three options because he can get the surgery, medical redshirt, come back to UNLV, get the surgery, medical redshirt, grad transfer. He could go somewhere else. He's on track to get his degree this year, or get the surgery, don't worry about the medical redshirt, and just leave college and go start playing professionally overseas or wherever it would be for Shakur Justin. So, he has some options. It does sound like he is planning to come back to UNLV, though. And, like, as far as next season goes, the exciting part of that, while he's not, like, technically a part of the recruiting class, getting Shakur Justin next year is, like, the biggest part of their recruiting class. Because you're essentially getting a one-and-done type of player who has been in your program for a couple of years already. Like, Justin
he'll
coming back.
He'll also be a man.
Yeah, he's going to be older than everybody. I think he might already be older than everybody.
I know.
He's going to be even more so now.
If we had a 28-year-old just rolling out there throwing shoulders.
It's an underwhelming class, like what UNLV has in 2019. It's two guards that are outside the top 300, that are three-star recruits. Like, there's not really a lot of impact. You get Justin back for another year. Again, it's 1 year. It's not really any sort of long-term situation, but that is a big boost to the recruiting class without it technically being a part of the recruiting class. The front court is going to be next year. Shakur Justin, Mbaki Jong, Joel Tomboy, Jonathan Chama-Chachua, Tervell Beck. Like, you've got – it's not loaded in terms of, oh, wow, that team's going to the NCAA tournament, but you've got a lot of depth there in that front court. The problem is the back court is Hardy, Hamilton, Woodbury, and then two freshmen. So it's kind of how all Marvin Menzies teams have been. They're sort of loaded in the front court, overcrowded in the front court, and they're sort of lacking in guards.
Jay Green. I've got to make Jay Green happen.
Jay Green might not be on the team next year.
I know.
So like, with Justin coming back, it means UNLV is technically one scholarship over. So somebody has to be gone. Usually guys transfer. It's college basketball. Teams usually lose an average of two transfers per year.
Bye, Jay Green.
But nobody did last year. Like, we thought that was going to happen, and it didn't happen this past season. So you got Jay Green. You have Georgie Slavonchin. Ben Coupet, Tervell Beck, if Tervell Beck somehow falls into never playing again. Like, you got guys that are potential transfers or just getting moved out of college basketball completely.
Or options just, there. They're so depressed about being fat shamed that they,
yeah, they
you
just
know.
Leave. And they're just like, I'm going to go somewhere where guys don't call me fat and then play me 9 straight minutes. Other bit of news from Mark Angelo, the RJ, Shaq Dembele is likely done for the season as well with a hand injury. So the front court kind of depleted now.
Just got smaller, right?
Marvin Minzy's going to be forced into playing smaller lineups.
I know!
They're going to win, and the next year he's going to be like, nope, going back to the 4 big man lineup. So if we look at sort of what UNLV should do going forward with their lineups, and Mike Grimal of the Sun pumps out the lineup numbers for UNLV. So throw out anything with Shakur Justin. But the new starting lineup, Noah Robotham, Chris Clyburn, Joel Tomboy, Jonathan Jamachachua, and Mbaki Jong. They've played together for 27 minutes this year. They've been outscored 62-33.
Yep.
In 27 minutes, the new starting lineup has been outscored by 29. If you extrapolated that over a 40-minute game, 92-49 would be the final score. That's terrible. Like, it's terrible. And they haven't even played, like...
That's not good.
They played BYU, so they have played one top 100 team, but they haven't even really played great teams. So Marvin Menzies has used two different starting lineups this year, and both of them have been outscored by a lot. So I'm curious if he makes a change to the starting lineup now that we're in Mountain West play, or later in Mountain West play. I don't know. But if you keep looking at Mike's numbers, of the 10 most used lineups, the best one that doesn't have Shakur Justin in it, the best one is Noah Robotham, Amori Hardy, Chris Clyburn, Joel Tomboy, and Jonathan Chamachachua. They've played together for 37 minutes, and they have outscored their opponents by 22 points.
Wow. What have we been trying to get Tomboy started at?
Yeah, power forward.
Yep.
That lineup.
It's almost like that's his natural position.
Almost. That lineup over, if you did it over 40 minutes, they would score 99 points in 40 minutes. So 99 points per game is what that lineup does offensively. That's the best offensive lineup they can put on the floor. Play Tomboy at power forward. Actually use 3 guards. That's what UNLV basketball needs to be the rest of the season. The question is, how much does Menzies do that? He doesn't like to change his starting lineup very much. Now, to his credit, though, he has used this lineup a lot. Like the last 4 games, he's let that lineup run. He doesn't start it, but he's like, that lineup's played more than the starters have played in the last 4 games. So he has used it, just hasn't started it as much. It's not the thing, though. It's not going to be a lineup that's like unstoppable because UNLV's not very good. Like, what you're relying on in that lineup is Amori Hardy being really good in the half court with the ball and Joel Tomboy being a matchup problem. The problem is Joel Tomboy will have a game where he shoots 4 of 15.
Oh, God.
And everything's from the mid-range. And you'll have a game where Amori Hardy has 4 turnovers and he gets in the lane and every decision he makes is bad. So, like, you'll have games like that and you're like, oh, this lineup's not working. But the alternative is Jay Green? I don't know. Ben Coupet is the alternative? Like, the alternative is just not very good. So you stick with that.
Can we get Bongai off of the red shirt?
He's being redshirted. Yeah, they might need to bring... You watch. Marvin Menzies will do that. He will burn the red shirt on Louis Bongai just so he can play 3 big men at the same time. That's what's going to end up happening. Uh-oh. Dembele and Justin are out. Better get Louis Bongai ready to go. So, yeah. That's what Marvin Menzies needs to do. He needs to play Tomboy at the 4. Like, what I would do, the front court rotation to me, Joel Tomboy plays power forward, and you play him as many minutes at power forward as you possibly can, right? 35 a night, whatever it is. Tervell Beck is your backup power forward. He's playing the other 5, or if Tomboy gets in foul trouble or has a bad game, 10, 12, whatever it is. That's your power forward rotation, and your center rotation is Jonathan Chamachachua and Mbaki Jong. And one of those guys is going to get in foul trouble every single game. The other guy gets to play. Like, that's how you determine your center minutes. So that, to me, is what I would like to see their front court rotation work out to be. The problem is that starting lineup, you start Tomboy at small forward instead of power forward, JTT and Mbaki Jong together. So it sort of ruins what that front court rotation should look like. But that's what it should be. And then you work your way through the guards with Robotham, Hardy, Clyburn, and Hamilton getting the most minutes. And then Woodbury you throw in there for a little bit. But that's what it should be. That's UNLV's best path to success. That's their best path to a good offense. That's their best path to having a decent Mountain West season. Again, the question comes down to, how much will Marvin Menzies actually do that throughout the course of the season?
Can I ask specific questions about tonight?
Yeah, Colorado State. This team sucks.
Which one?
Colorado State.
Okay, well, no. Yeah,
UNLV's just mediocre. They're bad sometimes. Colorado State is 5-8. They are 0-7 against the top 200 in KenPom. Not the top 100, the top 200. They have not beaten a top 200 team this year.
What style do they play? Because no offense, I'm not rolling around just like flipping through the channels going, where's the Colorado State game?
So they will at all times have four shooters on the floor.
Okay.
But
they're not very good.
They're an average 3-point shooting okay. team, and they shoot sort of an average amount. But
they're not chuckers.
The big guys that shoot aren't great shooters. Like, they're shooting like 31%, and they're not even really big guys. They're only like 6'6". So like, it's not a major matchup. It could, like, conceivably they could come out here and rain threes, but it probably won't happen. The good thing for UNLV is Colorado State's two main players, J.D. Page is the guard. He'll have the ball in his hands. But then their number two player is their big guy, Nico Carvacho. He does not shoot threes. So, like, they'll run the offense through the post. And, like, anytime a team does that, you're helping UNLV out immensely, because UNLV can defend that, usually, can defend that.
I was about to say, how quickly do we get into foul trouble?
So it's not a terrible, terrible matchup. It could be. Like, they have the capabilities of putting four or five shooters out there and just raining threes, but they haven't really been that good. And they're not, like, on the other side of the floor, Colorado State defensively, they might be the worst in the conference. Like, they're terrible on defense, and they're a bad defensive rebounding team. UNLV's number one in the country right now in offensive rebounding percentage. Like, UNLV's offense in this game might just be, chuck it up, we'll go get it and put it back in. Like, and that might work. That literally might work if that's what UNLV does the whole game, because Colorado State's not a good rebounding team, and UNLV's the best offensive rebounding team in the country right now. So,
well, what defense do they play? Is it
I
like
have no
a
idea.
Okay.
I don't watch them that much to be like, uh-oh, here's what Colorado State's going to throw at you.
No, it just, they're playing like a soft zone, and it just turns into, you know, the jugs machine off the glass.
I would imagine, given that they've been so bad. Let's see. KenPom has them as 3-19 in defense at the moment.
Oh, God.
I'd imagine that since they've been so bad, they've probably tried a lot of different defensive schemes. Because usually when you're bad at defense.
Permanent cherry picker.
Yeah. Usually when you're bad at defense is when you start throwing just everything at the wall. Like, even when you're average at defense, like UNLV this year, they're not terrible defensively. They're pretty average across college basketball. But even Marvin Menzies is like, all right, we're going to just try this weird zone thing out real quick, because who the hell knows if it's going to work. So I imagine they've played a ton of different defenses, and none of them have worked at all. So I don't know. Probably I would guess they zone UNLV, because you want to keep UNLV from getting post touches and getting Tomboy driving to the rim and Hardy driving to the rim. So I imagine you zone them and make UNLV. I mean, that's what I would do. Make them shoot over you the whole game. And BYU got screwed out of it. BYU tried to zone them, and UNLV torched them, but nobody, that hasn't happened in any other game. Like, UNLV's not a good shooting team, so I'd imagine they zone UNLV.
Okay, because I just, for some reason, am imagining UNLV just, like, basically throwing it towards the glass.
Yeah, just one-handed, just yeah. Get it up there.
And then just, everybody go get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just, you know, try to tap it in.
Yeah, they only got one tall player on the floor, Colorado State. So
that's
yeah,
kind of...
Just tap it to your buddy on the other side of the room. Let's pad our rebounding stats here, guys. Shooting percentage is going to be terrible, but rebounds are going to be great.
We're not a shooting team.
Yeah, 7:30 tonight. UNLV, Mountain West. This is when it gets important. Figure out if Marvin Menzies actually has, you know, hey, we can win Mountain West games this year, or if it's like, oh, God, they can't win Mountain West games this year.
Is this part of the eat all you can? It takes everything in my power every time I say that not to go all you can eat.
No, it is not. They have a four-game package now. I think it's New Mexico, Boise State, Nevada, and San Diego State.
Well, I knew two of the games were good, and then one or two of them were like,
are any of them good? The Mountain West.
Well, that Nevada game would be something I'd be interested in.
Well, the
in
other
going
team
to.
Is good. Is the yeah. game going to be good? Probably not. That one's going to be
But
scary.
If I'm getting hot dogs, I'm not really that interested. You know?
You get hot dogs, and you get to watch a Final Four team play. Definitely correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming, Trout the Peak Connected Sports Betting App. It is the easy sweater on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
So. I love you. I love this guy.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV may unveil a new logo in 2020.
Please, please give me a new logo. Apparently, this would be to coincide.
Get the guys who did the Aviators.
Yes, just use the Aviators logo. Just let that become the logo of all sports teams in Las Vegas. Just change the colors, you know? Golden Knights will be red and black. Raiders will be silver and black. Golden Knights have some gold. Apparently, it would coincide with the football team moving into the new stadium. That's why 2020 is the date picked out there. But it didn't sound like it was a for sure, hey, we're going to unveil a logo in 2020. It was like, a, hey, maybe.
Do you think anyone is seriously considering my idea?
Nobody has ever seriously considered any of your ideas.
Good point. But I still say, get Disney on board. We become the UNLV Rebels, but instead of using whatever crappy symbol they're going to pay someone in Poughkeepsie $50,000 to design, we just go with Han Solo.
So it'll be fun to watch if they do unveil a new logo. if it is
here for these jokes,
immediately used by the football and basketball team. Because
if they actually commit,
yeah,
whenever they release a logo and they actually commit to it,
because the
instead of going, oh, the fans don't really like it.
The logo right now never made it onto basketball or football jerseys. And the excuse they used was that they had already ordered the jerseys prior to unveiling the logo. Now, they knew they were coming up with a new logo, but yet they, quote, ordered the jerseys before the logo was unveiled, so they could not have it on their jerseys. So what will be very funny to me is if in, like, July of 2020, they unveil a new logo, and then August of 2020, we see it on the football jerseys. Like, that would just be funny to me because they couldn't commit. They couldn't get it done in time because of the how you order jerseys. But I'm sure they will if they actually have a good logo.
Okay, except the only place that I've ever seen, I ever saw the new logo used was exclusively on recycling containers and trash bins.
They got those
throughout
orders in time.
Campus.
That order date matched up perfectly with when the new logo was unveiled. Everything else, though, no, we had to order this way in advance, and we can't possibly order new jerseys now. It's only been around for 2 years. How could we get new jerseys? Like, UNLV basketball had new jerseys after the logo, and it had the old Hey Reb on it. Like, they still had the old Hey Reb on brand new jerseys. It made no sense.
The Raiders have signed Nathan Peterman to a future/reserve contract.
It's just a complicated NFL salary cap definition on the contract. Basically, they're not, like, long-term committed to him or anything, but they sort of just claimed him so nobody else can sign him or anything like that. Because there's, like, 9 other guys they signed to this future reserve contract. But Gruden is definitely going to make Peterman his number 2 quarterback, isn't he?
Number 2?
You're going to say number 1.
I'm waiting until the next or the fourth segment whenever we get the Mayock sound, because I'm kind of hoping the winds of change are we traded Carr, we draft, you know, the kid from Duke whose name I can never remember off the top of my head, but I guess he's the number 2 quarterback in this draft. And then you have Nathan Peterman there to tutor him
to
in the ways of tanking.
All right, before we get to the number 1 job, the number 2 job is A.J. McCarron. He can be let go without any sort of dead cap problems. He is under contract next year for $5 million. So they can get rid of A.J. McCarron, and it won't – I mean, it cost them the 5th-round pick they traded for him, but it won't cost them anything else.
It also might make Brent Musburger mad.
Very sad. He'll quit his job as Raiders play-by-play guy. But so they can get rid of McCarron. So, yeah, we're getting closer and closer to Nathan Peterman starting a game in Vegas in 2020.
Max Pacioretty has returned to the ice before practice.
So he didn't play last night, but he did skate at morning skate. He's on injured reserve, got hurt December 17th, so you're looking at half of a month right now that he's been out. Big name you'd see back in the lineup. The curious question, though, is what does Gallant do with the lineup when Pat Reddy comes back? Or I guess what does McPhee do with the roster when Pat Reddy comes back? Because Brandon Peary could get sent down. But the interesting thing is if they do not send Brandon Peary down, and we're going to do a lot more on Brandon Peary in a little bit, but if they do not send Peary down and they waive somebody else or somebody else gets hurt or whatever it is, does Peary get to stay on the second line with Stasny and Tuck? Or does Pat Reddy take his spot and Peary's playing somebody else? Because Stasny, Tuck, and Peary have been unreal together. Like, they've got the best Corsi of any line the Golden Knights have used. Like, they haven't allowed a goal when those three are on the ice together. Like, they've been really good. Patch Reddy with Eakin, which would be where he would go if you keep Peary on number two. They were not very good. Like, when those two have played together, they've been really bad, actually. So I'm curious what happens and when Pat Reddy comes back, what they do with Brandon Peary, because I hope he stays on the lineup, and I honestly should stay at the second line and make Pat Reddy figure it out with Eakin and whoever the hell else you throw there, Carrier, Noshik.
You're back. Figure it out.
Yeah, just whatever. You're good. Go make somebody else good.
Peary makes his teammates better. Nate Schmidt wants Vegas to host the Winter Classic.
Quote thanks to Danny Webster of Knights on Ice. But yeah, have it at Raider Stadium. His quote was, have it at Raider Stadium, just open a window.
just open a window.
Well, because the Winter Classic is usually outdoor venues. Raider Stadium is not going to be outdoor. But they will have the, what is that? That end zone wall is going to open so you can see the strip. So like 1/4 of the wall is just going to move the hell out of the way so it can be a window. I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've... haven't we hosted an outdoor hockey game before?
I mean, like, in the 90s. I think it was a preseason game, maybe.
Oh, yeah, no. But an actual one that means something would be cool.
Yeah. Could Golden Knights would sell out a 75,000-seat stadium? 65,000-seat stadium?
In this town, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. Be pretty quick.
I also think if they make it outdoors, just shut down a large, like, section of the strip. And just have them play in an intersection. And
not at the Raider Stadium, just
no,
on the
just
strip.
Legitimately, they would shut down.
Okay, I like that, like, better, actually.
People would just be like, well, traffic is bad, but hey, our boys are out there playing, so.
How do you sell tickets for that?
Oh, no, don't sell tickets. Just make it an open seating event.
Yeah, you just walk by. You can't even sit. You got security guards telling you, keep going.
Move along.
Keep going.
Move along.
Nothing to see here. Let's go. I'm all for, like, the Golden Knights playing games and stupid places. Like the Dallas Stars are playing at the Cotton Bowl in the Winter Classic, and they haven't announced their opponent yet, but it might be the Golden Knights. That who it could end up being. I hope so. Like, I just want to see them play in every stupid possible place.
Can we get a pond game
at
some point?
Yeah, just out there. Again, no seating. Just play it in the middle of Canada or something.
Oh, it's called Lake Mead. Marc-Andre Fleury posted his NHL-leading 6th shutout last night.
So,
donuts, I know.
More of a credit to the Kings being bad and Vegas sort of being dominant and sort of not allowing shots than it was Fleury. Fleury did have a good save on Tyler Toffoli having a breakaway there, but it's probably the easiest shutout Marc-Andre Fleury has had. Fleury's had an interesting season, like, statistically, because, and I know people like to yell about goalie stats not having enough context, like they don't do goalies enough justice, but Vegas is top five when it comes to shots allowed, scoring chances allowed, high danger chances allowed per 60 minutes. They're top five in all three of those. Like, they're, as a team, their best attribute this year is probably that they don't allow very many shots or very many scoring chances. Despite all of that, Fleury has pretty average numbers. Like, his goals saved above average is 24th in the NHL at 2.6. So he's saved basically three more goals than an average NHL goalie would. And that number, 3 or 2.96, is a cumulative number. So the more games you play, the higher that number should be. He's played the most games in the NHL, and he's still only 24th on that mark. Like, he's slightly above average. His save percentage, if you take there are 30 goalies that have played 20 games, he's 13th. So slightly above average there. So it's weird because his numbers, Fleury's numbers this year would imply he's a very average goalie. But if you asked anybody on the Golden Knights, they'd say he's the best goalie in the world. But it's like his numbers don't really back that up. And you know, it feels like he has incredible games where he's like, oh, yeah, the reason the Golden Knights won is because Marc-Andre Fleury was the best player on the ice. But that happens, you know, once every five or six games. And the rest of them, it's like, yeah, he's fine. We just only gave up seven shots in this game. So, of course, he didn't give up a goal. Like, that's just, I don't know, that's just how it feels. Fleury's season is gone.
Is it bad? I'm starting to hope that the concussion comes so that way we can get him some rest.
Man, you were giving me crap for saying Colin Miller should have gotten hurt earlier in the year. Now you're talking about concussions?
Yeah, I shouldn't mess with people's
Jesus,
brains.
Jesus, you're not allowed to wake up and do the press box anymore.
Well, yeah, I'm hanging out with those people. They're, you know, known for their positivity.
47% of the Golden Knights' goals have come from carry in zone entries.
Hockey analytics. Jared doesn't have any idea what that means.
Okay. No, I just thought that you had a typo.
Nope. Jesse Granger wrote a story about all of the goals at the midway point. Tons of numbers in there. But the one analytic that I feel like, I don't know, I don't think we've ever talked about it.
No.
But it's an important analytic. It's how you get the puck into the offensive zone.
Okay.
So you carry it in, you dump it in, or you have a face-off. That's how you get the puck in the offensive zone. And so the way you can actually use this analytic to watch hockey, like take basketball, and like I always yell, don't take mid-range jump shots. You watch your teams play. If they take a lot of those, it's bad, right? The way you can watch hockey, when Ryan Reeves is at center ice and he just flips the puck behind the net, that's a dump in, that's bad. You don't score that way very often. But when Alex Tuch has it at center ice and he skates through two guys and gets it into the zone on his stick, that's a carry-in, that's good. That's when you tend to score goals, is when that stuff happens. So, like, this is an analytic you can actually, like, watch the game and be like, oh, they're doing that well. Like, oh, he just flipped it in behind the net. That's not good. And that's what, like, Will Carrier and Ryan Reeves do. They flip it in behind the net, and then they run down there and try to hit somebody and get the puck back. Sometimes they don't even care about getting the puck back. They just want to get somebody. But that's not, you know, that doesn't lead to goals very often. Whereas when Alex Tuch or Marcia Show or whoever carries it in on their stick, that's what tends to lead to goals. So, I don't know. Jesse's story was good, and it reminded me that's an analytic we should talk about more, because I talk a lot about basketball analytics. This is a good one.
Okay, cool. You're going to probably have to explain it every single
carry
time.
Carry in. You carry it in. Not in your hand, just on the stick. You carry it in, or you dump it in. Not that hard.
The Raiders may be HBO's Hard Knocks this year.
Was that phrasing correctly?
The Raiders may be on HBO's Hard Knocks this year.
Oh, did I? Yeah, I read it wrong.
Yeah. You want this, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I've never watched
it. I like content
before.
During the summer.
Yeah, I've never watched it before, but I'm okay with it just because, hey.
Well, why else would you hire a guy off TV and then hire another guy off TV if you didn't expect to be on TV?
Is that what it is? They're going to be on Hard Knocks, so they hired Mike Mayock?
Yeah. Well, no, John Gruden. And John Gruden knew that they were probably going to be on TV, so he's like, we got to get somebody who's, you know, TV polished.
So the
Do
Raiders,
you recast Mark Davis?
The Raiders might be forced into this.
Is the guy from Billions available?
According to Pro Football Talk, teams can be forced to do Hard Knocks if they haven't done the show in the last 10 years, haven't been to the playoffs in the last 2 years, and don't have a new head coach. So the teams that fit that category, Raiders, Lions, Giants, 49ers, and Redskins, the Raiders are the most interesting of those teams. By far.
Yeah, because what's going to happen with the Washington team is it's just going to be the same thing it always is, where they would go, no, actually, Washington's a great organization with a wonderful history, and it's like, haven't you guys, like, literally made up rumors about your former GM having a drinking problem?
Yeah, not important. Do you think the Raiders want to do it?
Again, why wouldn't you? It made the Browns, like, America's team.
Yeah, like, I feel like it would be the perfect place for John Gruden to sort of, like, get out some propaganda about how hard he works. Like, everybody's like, he's a Gruden grinder. Like, John Gruden would be like, oh, I'm on TV. They show the sun rising. John Gruden's been at work for 2 hours. Like, perfect chance for him to be like, look how hard I work.
Is it bad that I want them to skip a year? Like, do it when you're moving to Vegas.
Yes, that is a good point. That would be
because
good.
When the Amazon Prime All or Nothing with the Los Angeles Rams, the only interesting part of the Los Angeles Rams season was the fact that they were moving to LA.
So just sign the Raiders up for Hard Knocks for the next 2 years.
That would be good.
Yeah. You get this last year, not in Oakland, somewhere else, and then Las Vegas.
I've never seen a traveling team, man.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Señores, una vez más, el disparo. ¡Gol! ¡Gol! Jay Bishop, señores. Cae la anotación de Vegas, Golden Knights. 4-2, Herbert Castro.
Buen gol.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
So the Golden Knights beat the Kings again. I feel like they're just beating up on bad teams at the moment. But they beat the Kings again.
That's what good teams do.
That's right. Take care of business. Good thing is everyone makes the playoffs in the NHL, so you get to play bad teams in the playoffs, too. But Brandon Perry scored again because, of course, Brandon Perry scored again. This guy's awesome. I hope he never stops scoring. Golden Knights losing 7-0. He goes and gets some garbage. I just want him to keep scoring because it's terrific. I want him to score every single game because what's amazing is the amount of Golden Knights fans on Twitter that are like pleading with the Golden Knights Twitter account not to send Brandon Perry back down to the minors because it's legitimate. He could get sent down to the minors like tomorrow, but like it's great because everybody is like, please don't send this guy down. Please. Because everybody knows he could be sent down like tomorrow as soon as Max Pacioretty is ready to play. So it is absolutely terrific how he scores. Everybody's like, oh my God, you have to save this guy, Golden Knights. You cannot send him to the minor leagues. Find somebody else. It's also funny that the guy who's scoring in every single game is in danger of being sent down to the minor leagues. Like, that's probably the real funny part here is that it's like, yeah, whatever. The reason why is Gerard Gallant doesn't trust him defensively. So like we've seen this in a couple of games now where final 5 or 6 minutes, he benches Brandon Perry, and Pierre-Edouard Belmar plays on the second line instead of Brandon Perry. And so what you have is he doesn't trust them, and Gerard Gallant essentially shortens his bench, goes down to 3 lines. He plays the first and the third line as usual. He benches the fourth line, benches Perry, and puts Belmar on that second line. So he keeps going down. So as much as Perry is scoring, the question kind of becomes, can the Golden Knights keep a guy on the roster that Gallant doesn't trust in those situations? I think you can, because I think the final 5 minutes, you're fine only playing 3 lines.
How, and this is, again, hockey novice question, but how two-dimensional do you have to be a, like, regular contributor?
Well,
like, can you...
Oscar Lindbergh's not two-dimensional. Like, there's a lot of guys on the roster that aren't really that two-dimensional. It's just a matter of Gallant trusting guys that are good defensively before, like if you had to pick one, Gallant's going to pick the guy that's good defensively. Especially if we assume health, which is you should probably never do that in hockey. But if you assume this team is fully healthy, like they would look at it and say, we don't need Perry to score goals because you have the top line and you have the second line and those guys are going to score. And then he trusts the third and fourth line to be good defensively. So that's just what he tends to lean towards. Now, goals win games. And, like, take last night's game. They're protecting a lead in the final 5 minutes, so you don't want Perry out there. But the only reason they had the lead is because Brandon Perry scored a damn goal. And here's what Jesus Lopez of ESPN Deportes sounded like when it happened.
Schmid, abriendo para donde está. Perry saca disparo, y el portero Campbell le para una Perry. Increíble. Una vez más, Perry para Nate Schmid. Con el disparo, ahí está el bloqueo. Una vez más, el disparo. Ahí está el número 73. En un tira-tira, por finmente queda a su disposición el Fox. No se la piensa, saca el disparo por el costado izquierdo del portero Tiago.
All right, so I want to do something fun here. So I have Brandon Perry stats because small sample size stats are the absolute best. Like, that's what this show lives on, is small sample size stats. So Brandon Perry, obviously, small sample size king at the moment, because every time he plays, he scores a goal. So I got a handful of Brandon Perry stats here. In 9 career games with the Golden Knights, Brandon Perry has scored 9 goals.
Perry, increíble.
In 30 career games with the Golden Knights, Max Pacioretty has scored 10 goals.
Perry, increíble.
In 97 minutes and 22 seconds with Brandon Perry on the ice this season, the Golden Knights have not allowed a goal.
Peary, increíble.
Among current players on the Golden Knights roster, Brandon Peary leads the team in Corsi at 60.2%.
Peary, increíble.
The Golden Knights average 15.5 high danger chances per 60 minutes with Brandon Peary on the ice. That is the highest of any one player.
Peary, increíble.
The Golden Knights average 40.3 scoring chances per 60 minutes with Brandon Peary on the ice. That is the highest of any one player.
Peary, increíble.
Brandon Peary leads the NHL in goals per 60 minutes at 3.7.
Peary, increíble.
Only one team in the NHL, the Tampa Bay Lightning, average more goals per 60 minutes than Brandon Peary does by himself.
Peary, increíble.
I love Jesus.
I do too. I love everything about Jesus.
That was him saying Peary increíble didn't even come after a goal. It was before the goal. That was pre-goal last night. So yeah, Peary, incredible. Please keep him up. Please. We have one more. Jesus Lopez here. Alex Tuck scored an empty netter. Pay attention. Herbert Castro, the color guy. Oh, he gets very excited. He jumps the gun in this one. It's fun. Pay attention.
Anche Kopitar. 45 segundos. Ahí lo mandan y otra vez para Anche Kopitar. La presión es fuerte por parte de Stastny. Ya lo tiene Peary. No hay portero, señores. No hay portero. No hay portero. Está el disparo.
Gol. Parece a la distancia Alex Tuck.
Sabía, Alex Tuck, efectivamente.
So yeah, Herbert Castro getting his own goal call in there before Jesus. That was an empty netter, so it's kind of like you could see it was coming. I feel like I had no clue what Jesus is saying, but before Alex Tuck actually scored.
Most of the time.
Before the actual goal was scored there, it felt like Jesus was saying, the goal's open, guys. The goal's open. Just shoot it. What are you doing?
That is great.
There's no goalie, guys. Like, they were not aware, but Jesus is like, dude, they don't have a goalie.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, and they heard Jesus, because they should all wear a little earpiece with Jesus calling the game. That would make them better, would it not?
I mean, one of my favorite moments that Jesus described was whenever they were playing his highlights in the arena with his call over it.
Oh, yeah. They do that after games, yeah.
Whenever that happened, like I was like goosebumps, because it's just, I don't know. His calls are so great. They just leave me with this permanent smile on my face.
Last thing on the Golden Knights. I hate the Kings. I hate watching them play. They went 20-plus minutes.
Just kind of a turd on ice.
Without a shot on goal last night. 20-plus minutes in the second period. All right, in the second period, they had one power play that lasted 2 minutes. So in the 18 minutes of even-strength hockey, the LA Kings had 5 shots. Not shots on goal, 5 total shots.
We dropped it in, right? No, that doesn't count. Okay.
No. That was an abomination. Like, I don't know what that was. The team is pathetic. They're terrible to watch. I'd never want to watch them play again. Like, even the crowd, like T-Mobile, tremendous environment. Atmosphere is always great. First 40 minutes of that game, oh my God, it was terrible because nothing was happening. Like, the Kings, like, if you watch that game, you would sit back and think, I don't think the Kings know what they're supposed to do to win in this sport. Like, they're supposed to score goals. They don't know that. They were unaware that was the objective of the game.
Dribbling off their foot.
The Golden Knights in the second period were better. But, like, the first period, the Kings were clogging up the neutral zone, and the Golden Knights couldn't get the puck into the offensive zone very effectively. They couldn't carry it in past the blue line very effectively. So, like, the first period was just terrible. I was counting icings versus shots on goal in the first period because they almost had more icings than they had. The Golden Knights had an icing like 5 seconds into the game. It was 10 minutes in, 3 shots on goal for the Golden Knights, 3 icings for the Golden Knights. It was terrible. So, like, I never want to watch the Kings play again. Never, ever, ever. It's a terrible team. They play them one more time this year. It's the very last game of the regular season. Like, but they should contract the Kings. Like, the NHL is trying to expand. Just contract the Kings.
Relegation.
Go back to 31 teams. Yeah, send them down to the AHL. That's fine. But, like, what? That team sucks. And they're going to be bad for a while because they need to rebuild because they're really old. Like, that team's really old. Like, every line has a guy over 34 on it. It's ridiculous. They're older than the Raiders somehow. And, like, they haven't even started rebuilding. They're already bad. Like, they're just going to be bad for a while. So just get rid of them. Send them to the American Hockey League and call some, I don't know, call the Chicago Wolves up. They score, like, 100 goals a game. I'll watch them. It'll be great. Then the Golden Knights will have to keep Peary.
Are we ready to go to break? I'm really
confused.
We're
going to talk about the Raiders next. Mike Mayock. I don't think he likes Derek Carr very much.
Beery, increíble.
Well, the White Tiger came out today.
Still got about 20% head in you. I got to get rid of you. Understand?
What kind of a bunny can have that type of flexibility and kick a man in the face?
Mike Mayock, new general manager of the Raiders. You coming around on Mike Mayock yet?
I mean, I still don't think he's technically qualified, but hey, whatever.
That's okay. It's not a real GM job.
I know, and that's the only part. Funnily enough, I was re-listening to our show because I'm trying to get better. I'm not, but I'm trying to get better. And you sort of made some good points that it's like...
I'm aware.
Sorry. For the people at home, I'm flipping him off right now.
So Mike Mayock was given a chance to talk about Derek Carr in his press conference. He was asked specifically, do you think Derek Carr is the quarterback of the future for the Raiders franchise? Here's his answer.
Why do you ask me questions?
That's really part of my study right now. I mean, bottom line, it's easy to pick names right now, but I'm not going to make a comment on anybody on the current roster until I've done a complete deep dive and I've had a chance to meet with all the coaches.
So that's a pretty strong no comment there. And
Gonna trade Derek Carr.
Like, there are certain questions in press conferences that media members will ask that set a coach or a player, or in this case a GM. They set them up to compliment someone. And usually, you would expect the new general manager to go out of his way to compliment his new quarterback that's getting paid $25 million. Like, that question is set up for him to say, Derek Carr is great. We're going to build around Derek Carr. Like, John Gruden did that when John Gruden got announced. He was all about how great Derek Carr was and how they needed to get better talent around Derek Carr and Derek Carr and Derek Carr. Mike Mayock.
How great Khalil Mack is.
Just lumped Derek Carr in with everybody else and says he doesn't want to comment on any players until he breaks down the tape. And to me, it makes me think he does not believe in Derek Carr as the quarterback. Because, like...
I mean, maybe he's watched football.
That's the thing. Surely he's watched Derek Carr play before, right?
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, in other parts
he's
of this
those
press checked conference...
Out.
In other parts of this press conference, he was, like, talking about how he was, you know, in his job at NFL Network. He wanted to, like, be the GM of all 32 teams so he could try to figure out what they would need. Like, this team needs this because this is what their personnel is how they play. And, like, he was asked to adjust, like, how he was going to adjust how, instead of going from just identifying, like, the best players in the draft to identifying players that fit the coaching staff scheme and all that stuff. And his answer was he thinks that was a strength of his when he was analyzing the draft. He was like, that's a big part of how I analyze drafts, is this is what they need. This is what fits well. So, like... He went out of his way to tell you he's watched a lot of NFL tape, that he's watched a lot of NFL plays and schemes and videos, and then he's like, oh, I need to watch the tape on Derek Carr. Like, it feels like he's hiding his opinion there.
It's always been blacked out at my market. I get caught up watching, Cam Newton. You forget that the Raiders have a team.
Yeah, it's hard. They're never in the playoffs. It's weird. So, like, we'll see what they do with Carr, but I just... That no comment to me made me think Mike Mayock is really, really not in on Derek Carr being the quarterback. And, like, the weird thing with where the Raiders are is, like, John Gruden and Mike Mayock and Mark Davis, they could all agree Derek Carr is not the guy. He'll still be the quarterback next year.
Unless they trade him during the draft.
Right. Which... But, like, they could all agree this guy's not going to be the quarterback of the future and still use him next year because... They're not really trying to win
still
the Super
tanking.
Bowl next year. Yeah, like, it's... They're not...
He's an effective tanker.
They're not in some sort of, like, championship window. And so when you're not in some championship window, it doesn't matter if your quarterback's not the quarterback of the future. You want to find the guy that is, but, like, even if you believe he's not, yeah, you're not trying to win the title yet. You're not really there as a franchise. Yeah, I'll keep Derek Carr around rather than pay him to go away. So, Derek Carr, next year. I don't know. You're still all aboard Nathan Peterman starting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're going to tank.
So trade Carr, cut or waive, whatever it would be, with A.J. McCarron. So it leaves you with Nathan Peterman, and then you draft. You were saying draft the guy from Duke, like he's going to go in the first round. Nah, draft a guy in like the fifth round.
All right, fair enough. I'm thinking you go Peterman 1A, A.J. McCarron 1B.
No, keep them both around. Okay. I think they have to.
Peterman is your pass specialist. AJ McCarron is your run specialist.
All for the tank. All for the tank. Another thing from this Mike Mayock press conference. Ted Wynn of The Athletic had this tweet. The main takeaway from the Mayock hire and press conference is that there seems to be an actual awareness of the fact that Gruden needs someone to challenge him. We all knew that, but it was unclear whether the Raiders knew that. How much that actually matters remains to be seen. So here is Mike Mayock actually talking. This is where Ted Wynn, I think, got that idea.
And I know we're going to argue about some guys, and I can't wait. I mean, because it really comes down to, what do you think? You've watched all this tape. What do I think? And let's get to the right answer for the Oakland Raiders. Right? It doesn't have to be your guy or my guy. Let's get the right answer. So all I can tell you is I felt the fit here more than I ever have.
So will Mayock challenge Gruden? I don't know. When they disagree on players, will John Gruden listen to Mike Mayock? Like, what happens when Tom Cable's like, hey, I want to make the first round pick, guys? Like, does Mike Mayock get to say, hell no? The big question, though, is does John Gruden actually respect Mike Mayock's opinion to where when they have a disagreement, John Gruden says, huh, maybe you're right, and John Gruden goes back and sort of reevaluates his own opinion?
I think John Gruden respects people's opinion more than we actually give him credit for. Essentially, the only thing I'm basing this off of is he went, you're our offensive line coach, Tom. Who should we take?
Okay.
I trust you.
That's true. But like the problem would be, and it seems like this is kind of what happened with Reggie McKenzie since John Gruden went and made out his own staff with his own big board of evaluating players in the NFL and draft boards and stuff. The problem would be is if, okay, you hire Mike Mayock. All right. He and John Gruden have a disagreement. You know, Mike Mayock makes his point for why this player's good. John Gruden makes his point for why that player's not any good. And if John Gruden doesn't respect Mike Mayock, he's just going to say, all right, whatever, and just do whatever he wants, regardless of what Mike Mayock thinks. That's not good, and that's a bad relationship, and this is not going to end well. It's a good relationship, and it's best for the Raiders if they disagree on something. Mike Mayock makes his point. John Gruden says, huh, all right, I see, and goes back and sort of tries to reevaluate his opinion. John Gruden might go back and say, no, you're wrong, you're an idiot, and does whatever he wants, but at least the thought process of, oh, somebody else might know something is what they need. Now, how much did it happen last year? I don't know. It didn't seem like it happened with Reggie McKenzie. Maybe it happened with Tom Cable a little too much, but that's sort of what the Raiders ultimately need to happen with Mike Mayock as this GM. It doesn't necessarily need to be a decision maker, but he needs somebody that just says, like, hey, John, I think this. It's different from what you think. What should we do?
I'm really fascinated because all the mock drafts have the Raiders taking either a stand-up pass rusher or an interior defensive lineman. And it really feels like, didn't they just draft, like, the last 2 years, didn't they draft, like, all, like, a bleep ton? Like, if you look at the roster, it's a bleep ton of linebackers and defensive linemen.
Not linebackers. Defensive linemen, though, yeah. Because they did the Arden Key, Mo Hurst, and there's one other that I'm forgetting. But they did three defensive linemen in last year's draft. Now, interior, I'm combining interior and edge rushers when you probably shouldn't. But I think that comes from the idea that the Raiders had a half sack more than Khalil Mack did by himself this past year. They beat
Khalil
Mack.
Whoa, we beat Khalil Mack!
13-12.5.
Suck it!
So I think that's where that comes from, the idea that nobody on the defensive line could get pressure, and they obviously need somebody that can get pressure on the quarterback. And, like, Arden Key was better in the second half of the year, but he still never did the whole sacking thing, the whole, oh, I'm supposed to get that guy on the ground? Oh, I thought got to touch him.
Ted Wynn had some great videos of just Arden Key grabbing the quarterback and then falling down.
So, like, they need some, I think that's where that comes from. Now, I don't know, you're picking fourth in the draft. Just from mock drafts, it looks like the top 10 is going to be defense heavy, so it's probably where they go anyways. I don't know, but
when everybody else zigs, we draft Will Greer at number 4.
I was going to make the point that it's a good thing that the Raiders have so many holes on defense, because they can pretty much draft anybody and it'll fit a hole. I don't know if that's a good thing, though. That's not really a good thing. But genuinely, every level of the defense, they have a need for somebody to come in and be a starter that's good next year. So if they draft anybody on defense, it's going to, quote-unquote, fill a hole. And offensively, kind of the same. Like, they don't really have a running back for next year. Jordy Nelson's their best wide receiver for next year, so they don't really have a wide
Seth
receiver.
Seth Roberts!
Oh, yeah, sorry, Seth Roberts. Marcel Aitman. And like the offensive line,
Dwayne Harris is 31-year-old ass.
Yeah, like the offensive line, you got Colton Miller, you got your three interior guys. You need a right tackle, but it's just they have a lot of holes. So they have a lot of holes to the point where they can just draft best available and it will fill the holes. All right, last thing from that press conference, and this is John Gruden being fully aware of his status, how Reggie McKenzie was fired. And this was him when he was asked how trade calls are going to be handled between him and Mike Mayock.
If it's a good trade, I'll make the calls. If it's a bad trade, it'll be Mayock. That's the way it's going to be around here.
He's joking. But is he really joking? Like, the people in the room are laughing. But I don't know that John Gruden meant that as a joke, in all honesty. Because that's kind of how this went down with Reggie McKenzie. Oh, the Khalil Mack trade was bad? Yeah, that was... Oh, God, that was... That was Reggie. He thought he did a good job. Well, I guess that was Mark Davis, but yeah.
But the job of a good executive or a good producer is to make the other person look good. So if it makes John Gruden look good, then that's Mayock doing his job correctly.
I mean, the job is to win games. So like if...
Just like it's our job to win awards, you know.
Win the ratings battle. It's like if they don't win games, everybody's going to get blamed and it's going to end up being Mike Mayock. If they win games, nobody's going to care.
Well, it's sort of like the UNLV logo and what someone said on Twitter. If they won games, no one would give a crap what the logo was.
No, that was a bad logo.
Oh, no.
It wasn't the winning games. You sort of mentioned it earlier. If they had just embraced the logo,
oh yeah,
people would have gotten over it. Like, people wouldn't have loved it, but people would have gotten over it. But because they ran and hid from the logo, and I went out of my way to point out every time it was somewhere. Because they ran and hid from it, like, it was just always an abomination.
You want so much credit for that.
So much. It's my brand. Logos are my brand. But because they hid from it, if they had just embraced it and said, screw you, here's our logo, it's everywhere, people would have gotten over.